From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Run, hide, fight. That's the advice from experts on how you should respond if you find yourself facing a gunman. We talk with experts from the Collier County Sheriff's Office and the FGCU Police Department who train the public on how to respond to an active shooter. Plus, a Naples synagogue saw its sign vandalized with a shotgun blast. And in the last month, racist graffiti and posters advocating white supremacy have been found on the Florida Gulf Coast University campus. We talk to the rabbi of Temple Shalom about how his community is responding. And we ask a researcher who catalogs hate incidents from the Southern Poverty Law Center about what's happening nationwide and how Florida fits into these numbers. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, the number of reported hate incidents in the U.S. is up to nearly 900 in the last month. Adding to that tally for December, on Monday, at the Temple Shalom in Naples, someone shot up the sign at the temple's entrance with a shotgun. We'll talk with Rabbi Adam Miller about this incident, and we'll look at continued discoveries of racist and white supremacist messages found on FGCU's campus. That's later in the show. But first, what do you do when someone with a gun bursts into your workplace and starts shooting? Or when a knife-wielding maniac jumps out of a car attacking people on your college campus? These are things that have happened recently, and news coverage of these kinds of attacks have people on edge. The response has been a coordinated effort by law enforcement to prepare people for the possibility of this kind of attack. There's even a program called Run, Hide, Fight, highlighting the three things we should do to increase the likelihood of survival. These active shooter training programs are being taught by officers across the nation. Staff Officer Scott Griffith with the Lee County Sheriff's Department and FGCU Police Chief Stephen Moore are among this group preparing civilians who might one day come face-to-face with an attacker whose intent is to kill as many people as possible. Thank you both for coming to talk with us about this subject. It's a very chilling subject, and it's unfortunate that we even have to talk about it. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We'd like you to be part of the conversation, too. Please call in and share your thoughts at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Message us at Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Chief Moore, from FGCU. Campuses have been a target on more than one occasion, heightening the importance of communicating with students and staff. How has this program been implemented here as far as teaching people how to react?
Sure. Obviously, the education part of this started back with Columbine, where we saw law enforcement respond, but they needed to change their responses, and there was really no training for the public at that time. Law enforcement went forward for several years training, and it continues to evolve to this day, but then there became, over time, the need to train the public. So these programs started coming out. So we offer at FGCU a couple different programs. We try to tailor it to the group that wants us to come speak. We have a one-hour presentation, which it uses a program. It's called When Lightning Strikes, and that's about a 30-minute video. It goes over all the same kind of things, the run, hide, fight. And we give a lot of information so that they can have the right mindset on how to survive an incident like this. We have a shorter version we have on our website. Anyone can go to the University Police Department website, watch a six-minute video that was produced by the Department of Homeland Security, and it will give you a nice short six-minute overview of, again, run, hide, fight. There's different terminologies, but run, hide, fight's the easiest one to remember. But it gives you, again, that mindset of how to survive. So we use that, and we can do a 20-minute or 30-minute presentation. We've made presentations to faculty, staff, students, outside groups, all sorts of groups. So, and it always peaks up whenever an incident happens, such as happened at Ohio State. Then, we send out more reminders to everybody about our links on our website, all of our safety scenarios, and then we usually get more responses for requests for presentations.
Yeah, people are very interested in learning more about it, but I wanted also Staff Officer Scott Griffith with the Lee County Sheriff's Department. Tell me a little bit more about the specifics. Break down the three elements, run, hide, and fight. What do you teach people in these three?
Well, running is basically evading, exiting, moving from the danger to a safety location. But there's some considerations that have to be taken along with that. You know, do I know where I'm going to run to? Have I really checked it out before? Do I know where the exits are? Is there more than one exit? One exit's blocked, can I get to another exit? You have to consider also some things like, you know, are you able to run? Can you move quickly? Yeah, if you're on crutches, you got a bad leg, bad ankle, bad back. If you have somebody else with you that might have some those kind of disabilities. So you need to be thinking about those type of things before you even start to move. And is it safe to go there, a dangerous place to a safe place? When we're talking about hiding, we're really talking about securing safely in a location. That could be a classroom. It could be an office. It could even be a bathroom. Things, again, to consider. Do I have locks on those doors? Are they sturdy doors? Could somebody get in them quickly? Am I around areas where there's a lot of glass? Can somebody see? Am I very visible from where I'm at? Can I evacuate from that location if I need to? Other things would have to do with lights, your cell phones, things of that nature. And there's a lot more specific and considerations to go on with both of those. And then finally, to fight, which is actually to defend yourself or attack as a last resort. And again, that takes into a lot of considerations as well. The type of things you might use. Is there more than one of you in a room at the time? So now somebody's going to have to take a leadership role and talk about and discuss some of the things you're thinking about doing. So in each one of those things, there are considerations. We go through that in our active shooter program that we have, which has been very successful. And I think that overall, the run, hide, fight concept has caught on greatly. And as the Chief's already mentioned, you could see even in this last incident that we had at Ohio State, you know, a lot of the tweets and some of the Facebook posts were coming out with those very words, run, hide, fight.
Yeah, I had a friend that thought it was the college slogan. I want to talk a little bit more about the fight angle on this.
Okay.
When I was growing up, I was always taught never try to fight a gun because you're probably not going to win. It's a different time now. Tell me about the difference and how can people possibly fight?
Well, again, we're talking about last resort here now, okay? When you have gone into the hide mode, you should be thinking about automatically, what am I going to have to do if this is not going to work, if somebody does come through that door and they do have a weapon? You know, what kind of things can I do? What kind of things can I use to my advantage that are in that room, whether it be a fire extinguisher, a pair of scissors, a pen, keys, books, things of that nature, something that I can use also to distract that subject? You know, these are all considerations that you would have to think about when it comes time to do or take action against somebody that might be coming in the room with a weapon.
It's just a really scary situation. There's a common argument that you hear sometimes when people talking about active shooters, and that is if there's someone else armed with a gun, either a police officer or an armed bystander that happens to be one of the quote-unquote good guys that has a gun, it's the only way to fight back. As a law enforcement professional, what do you think about people carrying guns of their own in these types of scenarios?
Well, you know, I think, you know, everybody with the Second Amendment rights, I know I'm a Second Amendment person. And I think the biggest issue really is whether or not you're trained with that weapon, whether or not you've gone to do additional things with it. You know how to handle it. You know how to break it down. You know how to safely keep it. And then you train with it and you start thinking about different scenarios that could happen and where you would utilize it at. You know, the biggest thing is, too, is that it's going to be a personal decision if you're happen to make and do the right things with regards to the law. I mean, a CCF permit, there are certain things that you have to go through. There's application process and other things that go along with it. So, I mean, you know, as long as you're meeting all those requirements and you're doing the things that you need to do and then, of course, being trained. As far as getting involved in incidents themselves, as we saw in this last incident involving, you know, one of our own, thank goodness we had a good Samaritan that was able to come along and help us out in that particular situation. But I think they're all going to be personal preferences, whether or not, one, you have the ability to do that and you have the mindset to do it and you have the training to do it. I think always the first thing is always going to be safety. Put myself in a safety first spot and position and then move from there.
That is an interesting aspect of it, too, putting yourself in a safe position and knowing you're coming from a position of keeping yourself and others safe and not putting more people at risk.
Absolutely.
By trying to be the hero.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about active shooter preparation with the Lee County Sheriff's Department and FGCU Campus Police. Call in and share your thoughts or questions that you might have for either the officers at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Message us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. You talked about training a lot with people with arms that are armed. There are people that are not armed. And what kind of training are you able to do with people that are civilians?
Well, as you may or may not know, Sheriff Scott is big on training and education, both with our personnel as well as the people we serve. And our active shooter program has done very well. We've got a great many people that are coming to this program now.
So do people come in or do you go to their place?
Actually, we go there.
Okay.
They'll call up the Public Services Division and request some training with regards to that, and we'll go right to them. Well, and we've been to every business that you can imagine throughout Lee County. As a matter of fact, we've probably done well over 100 since March.
Since March.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a demand for this then.
Oh, we already have them on the calendar into next March.
Oh, wow. You're really booking them out. Well, it sounds like it's something that needs to happen as far as getting people in the mindset. And you were talking earlier about getting yourself in a mental space of looking around and being prepared, correct?
Without question. You know, one of the first things that we tell folks, even involved in our program, is that you got to start out with the what if then type thinking mentality. You know, for us sitting here right now, if God forbid something should happen right outside these doors, what would you do? What have you thought about doing in the past? Would you be able to lock this door and shut it down? And could you, if you needed to, get out? It would assist this door or another door that's in this building. The same what-if-then type thinking would take place even in a parking lot when you park your car. Have you ever thought about the fact that maybe you just shut your door as soon as you step out, you look across, and about 10 feet away from you, there's somebody holding a gun? What would you do? If you've not thought about that ahead of time, when it happens, you're going to panic. And there's a bunch of things that take place inside your system when that does happen. We know for a fact right off the bat that your heart rate can go to well over 200 beats a minute. We also know that between 160 and 185, you start to lose all fine and gross motor skills unless you've trained there. Now, fine motor skills would be your ability to pick up the key and put it in a car door or maybe a house lock. Gross motor skills would be your ability to run or jump up and down. Between 160 and 185, unless you've practiced and trained there, those things really start to leave you. So that's why what-if-then type thinking is very important. Because once the brain now starts to have a picture, it sends out messages to the 464 voluntary muscles you have in your body. And now it can grab that picture, which is a little bit more vivid up there because you've thought about it. And now you go to a trained response. Now, it might not be 100% training, but at least it's something. So now your brain can grab that picture and it sends out those messages. And now you start to move. And that's what's important. Respond.
It seems like it's different, though, from personal self-defense when you're talking about a mass shooting situation. I mean, as a woman, you learn to be aware of your surroundings, keep your keys in a certain way in your hand when you're walking to your car. You know the whole drill.
Sure.
But it's a different, and you're ready for a one-on-one confrontation. But when you're in a group setting, does that change the kind of response that people have?
I think it does because now, you know, somebody is going to have to take some charge. If we're in a room and there's more than one of us, we're going to have to start deciding who's going to do what. You know, whether we're taking a person down to the ground and who's going to do what once the person gets down on the ground. So, yeah, things do change.
And these are the kind of training things that you go over with individual groups.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, for example, you go into a classroom on campus and you're talking to students, teachers, faculty, and you're kind of deciding, and people are maybe mentally coming up with their own role.
Yeah, just what was said in the classroom, it's the exact same thing. Again, these can happen anywhere. People think a lot of times about college campuses, but they can be shopping centers, they can be movie theaters, banks, wherever. But we do at the university give the presentations. Again, it's look at can you lock the doors in this classroom or your offices. What do you have available to assist you if somebody does come through that door? You can pick up a stapler gun. Do whatever you can to attack that person if that's what it comes down to. But it is – you have to have that survival mindset is the biggest thing. And then you do – if you have more people, again, you can plan. You know, and you can if somebody comes through that door, what are we going to do? And usually a leader will come forward And then but the others need to be involved. The more, the better, because, you know, you need to have a plan. You need to take advantage of any opportunities. We see opportunities that come up when either people have to reload. We've had situations where guns have jammed. I mean, UCF had that happen. FSU at their library shooting had that happen where the gun jammed. So, again, as soon as that opportunity presents itself, that's when the group has to act.
And you need to not have your heart racing at 200 and you're fumbling with everything and trying to get your mind about you. So how long have you been in campus police?
10 years.
Okay. So when you first got into the campus police business or the job, it was a very different world. Did you imagine you would be doing these kinds of trainings ever?
Again, that's one of the things that's changed. After the Columbine shooting, I was actually down in Naples, and I remember coming to our first active shooter training group meeting was up here at FGCU. But then when I came up here in 2006 as the chief, it had changed some, but we actually picked up the active shooter training a couple years after that, because it's been more and more. You see more of the incidents. The media certainly covers them more. So, you know, you get Sandy Hook, you get these other events, and they're just major media events. So there's a demand for the training, and we want to provide the people information so that they can be safe, feel safe, and they know how to react. So it's certainly not anything I thought of 20 or 30 years ago. But we continue to evolve as these incidents take place.
You know, it's kind of interesting, like you mentioned, the media really covers these things, because if they didn't, they would be considered irresponsible for not covering these types of events. But sometimes there can be an overreaction or an unjustifiable fear. But I wanted to take a look at some numbers. The FBI reports that the murder rate in the United States is at a 51-year low. That's on top of a nationwide drop in violent crime in the last decade. Nonetheless, over this last decade, incidents of mass shootings have gone up, and the number of people killed in such incidences continue to climb. The FBI's data shows 7 of the nation's 10 deadliest mass shootings took place in the last 10 years, one of which just earlier this year. How do we respond to the idea that these mass shootings are getting more and more lethal?
Well, I think it's one of those phenomenons. I obviously, you sort of get the copycat. It becomes the trend. It's something that people unfortunately fantasize about. They see somebody else did it. You also have the access to, weapons that can assist this more. Now, again, these happen with knives. They can happen with all sorts of simple weapons, but you do have people who are using automatic weapons, rifles, other things that make this even more deadly. So that has changed over the years. So some of that all plays into just what's out there. And again, I'm one of those who believes, because the media covers it so much, that other people are seeing that. And again, unfortunately, they might have different mental health issues or whatever else, and they start fantasizing about that or seeing how they can be glorified by doing something like that.
Well, one thing that I do think is uniquely American is that we are organizing ourselves to be prepared to defend ourselves, which is what you are helping people to do by teaching the Run, Hide, Fight classes. In addition to the Run, Hide, Fight at FGCU, you said that you had a couple safety measures like apps on campus?
Yeah, we have a variety of devices that can be used to notify the campus. So we have a safety app, our Guardian Eagle safety app, so that students, faculty, staff can notify us when something is happening, because, again, getting law enforcement notified as quickly as possible. So that's as quickly as hitting a button on their phone and notifying us. We have our outdoor siren that we can notify the campus so that they know to seek shelter and then seek information. We have our FGCU Alert, which is our text messaging service that we can send out a text message that, it, just like they did at Ohio State, it's restricted on the amount of characters, and we want to get out specific information. So people had questions about Ohio State at the Run, Hide, Fight. Well, they got out specific information. They gave a location, and they said shelter in place, and that's going to be the information. So we have that text messaging capability for all of our faculty, staff, and students. So we use that. So there's a number of ways to get it. We have push information to take over computer screens, take over TV screens, all sorts of ways to get information out on campus. So biggest thing is make people aware. they can seek shelter, and then they can seek additional information.
And that works great in a campus environment. But Staff Officer Griffith, we know that Sheriff's Office doesn't really endorse specific apps. Are there any other ways that people can keep themselves safe and get the word out and make that type of communication happen to keep people safe?
Well, I think we are doing that right now.
Yeah.
You know, with more and more people that we are able to reach with regards to this program and the many others that Public Services Division offers, as well as all law enforcement agencies across this country are doing, I think that that's going to become more and more evident with us from a training standpoint. I think also that, you know, like he was saying, the chief was saying, there are some apps out there. We don't endorse any particular ones, but they can be very helpful. I think the other part of that, too, is for us to all start to take some responsibility. You know, I know that we are doing the best job we can do, and I know the chief's doing the best job they can do. We can always do more, yes. We can always get better. But I think as individuals across the nation, we all need to take a little more responsibility for ourselves and our own safety as well, to start looking around, to start thinking about some things, about what if that was about to happen? What would I do? If I have children, how would I work that? How would the things that I would do if I'm at the mall, I'm at the grocery store, so on and so forth, or if I'm in my car in a parking lot? Just starting to go through those a little bit more to have that awareness about yourself. And I think those will help those definitely add and help us when it comes to training.
You mentioned children. Do you have different programs when you're dealing with schools where small children are?
Well, the active shooter program stays along the lines of run, hide, fight. And again, there are certain considerations that you have to think about in every location. And when we go to a location, we're a little bit more specific in that location. What those things are, I'm not going to give out on the radio. But yes, they are a little bit more specific to the location.
Okay. Well, we do have a caller on the line. We have Ryan. He has a question about different types of weapons that are used in attacks. Ryan?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And first off, I want to say I definitely support Gerald's endeavor and what you're doing with the active shooter program. It sounds like a good thing in general. But when you're talking about the implements used to cause these unfortunate events and also the frequency with which they have been increasing, I mean, we sort of just glossed over the fact that people have a more readily available source of higher quality weaponry, stuff that maybe one day been military grade. People can go online with very little background checks involved and get these implements of the destruction. I mean, yeah, I know it's realistic that people can use any implement to cause damage, to cause harm. You mentioned knives, but I mean, the realistic thing is you're not going to have a mass stabbing. I mean, the amount of damage somebody can do with a single blade is severely limited by comparison to a fully automatic weapon that you can simply replace a spring or a trigger to make into that.
Okay, thank you for your comment. So he's asking about these automatic, semi-automatic weapons, things like that becoming available. How does that impact things?
Sure. I don't think I had glossed over it. I had mentioned the type of weapons that people have used, but I think when people see the rifles, they automatically think that it's an automatic weapon. Most of those used in these shootings are semi-automatic. They're still taking individual trigger pulls, but they do have more capacity. Again, I'll go back to the UCF tower incident. They were fortunate. There's a gun that jammed. That had a 120 capacity on that rifle that that student was going to use. Fortunately, it jammed. So, no, there are advances in everything. There's advances in firearms, and some people are going to use that for bad purposes. So, yeah, they're out there. It can make it more deadly. That's why I think there's more training. People need to know, is there an opportunity where I can bring this to an end? Law enforcement, it usually ends as soon as law enforcement gets there. Usually the shooter will commit suicide is one of the most common ways. So it usually ends when law enforcement gets there. But what are you going to do? Again, have that survival mindset. What are you going to do until law enforcement gets there? And that's what the training is all about.
And another part of that training is you going to the place. When you go to a specific office building or a school situation or a business, is it helpful for you to specifically look at the doors, look at the locks, and point things out to people that they may not have otherwise realized?
Sure. And again, that's just another great service that we offer at the sheriff's office.
And how do people, if they are interested in learning more, how do they do that?
If they call the Public Services Division, I give you a number right now. It's 258-3280. And they can ask about that and many other things and many of the other programs. They can go to our website. But like you're talking about, we do site surveys. They actually come right out there, and they're pretty in-depth site surveys with regards to your location, wherever that might be. So if they go there, they can find out about that, and they'll put them in touch with the right person.
And I think you would have a different set of eyes than, say, for example, a radio host who might look at things differently, right? I mean, we don't walk in a police officer's shoes, so we don't see things the way that you do. So it's a pretty important service, and we will have links to that on our website. And that is about all the time that we have today. I'd like to thank Staff Officer Scott Griffith with the Lee County Sheriff's Department and Chief Stephen Moore with the FGCU Campus Police Department for coming in to talk about this uncomfortable but necessary topic. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and those tips with us as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up, a shotgun blast vandalizes a Jewish temple in Naples. We'll talk with the rabbi about how the community is responding and a national expert about how it fits into what's being called a spike in hate-related incidents nationwide. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Stay with us.